Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome into Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Wherever and whenever you're listening, it's probably beer o'clock, and we've got a lot of good stuff coming up for you right here on the podcast starting right now. Welcome back into Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris, and this is the beginning of a three-part series that we are very excited about, and Patrick especially so. Yesterday, he was damn near giddy talking about this series on the air.
I'm really jacked. This is cool. We've wanted to do kind of some projects like this. I have other ideas down the future, whether it be women in beer or other things like that, that kind of have multi-facet episodes that let us kind of touch all sides of each part of the topic.
So what we're doing is we're going to do a couple of weeks talking about distribution from... and bringing in different people every single week who do different roles and work at different types of companies in distribution. And today we are joined in the entire podcast. We're not just doing an interview segment with him. Is Shane Nisbet. Did I say that right?
You did.
Nice. From Point Blank Distribution. And as I said off the air, I want to say Point Break Distribution really badly for some reason. So Shane, what we're going to do is we're going to just do our week in beer, which is what we normally do. You can tell us all the beer you've been drinking this week He pours.
I have sparkling water just to...
Oh, is that sparkling
clean,
water?
Clean off the...
You're not just pouring vodka straight into that glass right there?
You guys can have some too if you'd like.
So we'll talk about our week in beer, and then we'll just dive right into the interview, and then we'll do beer of the week, which apparently you have for us.
Oh yeah, I brought all sorts of beers. It's kind of my job.
I was texting with him about trying to set this up, and Shane was like, you guys need to drink more beer on this podcast. And I was like, well, I'm not going to say no to that.
I mean, I don't want to say no, but I also normally work right after recording the podcast, so I can't get loaded.
But today we're good.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, you just got to sit in a booth. You're fine.
Yeah, I'll be fine.
That's right. There's a game tonight. Huh?
Yeah.
Push buttons.
I got to push buttons from 3 until... 9.
Death.
So you can bring the treat. Yeah, you can drink the treats I brought you.
Exactly. Yes. It makes it even better because I was like, should I bring beer in tonight? I was like, yeah. Oh, that's right. Shane's bringing beer. Like, right. Yes. Okay, perfect.
It's a good thing our bosses don't listen to this podcast.
Right. Well, if they did, they'd probably just be like, can I have some?
Yeah.
Right.
Hopefully.
They would tell you probably don't drink enough. And
right. Exactly. Exactly. They want us to sound way more slosh talking than we normally do on like our tasting room episodes. I feel like by the end of that, I'm like,
yeah, we get to beer of the week and it's like, derp, this beer's good. Derp, yeah. Derp.
I've already had 5. I don't know what this one is, but okay. So you can find this podcast all over the place. We are on radio.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Omni, and on 1080thefan.com. You can find our social media, Instagram.com/beersonus. I'm at MikeLynch27 on Twitter. Patrick's at PDD085 on Instagram. Do you have one you want to pub?
I am at Keg Wrangler.
Keg Wrangler on Instagram.
Yeah.
So that's where you can find Shane.
Instagram is life for beer.
I know. I've been enjoying looking at the pictures when using our Instagram. Thank you. When using our Instagram, you followed all these breweries and people, and I just enjoy looking at the pictures that they all share. So that's where you can find us. We post pictures about the podcast. We post pictures about what we're drinking just during the week. So before we get into the interview portion of this, week in beer. I didn't do things that were too crazy. I did go down to Breakside on Saturday with a buddy. He had yet to go there, and I brought him there. I had a couple of fresh hop beers. I had the Near Pert Crux fresh hop in my fridge that I had yet to drink. I had that one and enjoyed it again. We had that on the first fresh hop podcast.
That band's overrated.
And no, they're not.
I think they are big time.
No, they're not.
Sorry.
I love so Rush. I love Rush. Come
Rush
on.
Is fantastic.
And then, interestingly enough, my wife bought a Deschutes box, and they had a brand new IPA I had not had in there called a Hand Up IPA, I think it is. Solid IPA.
Tickle me intrigued.
It was they had a fresh squeezed Black Butte Obsidian Stout, and then Hand Up or Hand Off, I forget the name of it, brand new IPA that they'd made. So that's what I've got in the fridge right now. That was my week in beer. Nothing over the top, just a nice simple week.
Yeah, I am transitioning into... the bar manager at Slabtown, so I'm there full time now, so that's kind of dominated my life. Hooray, yay, I'm pretty excited about it. It's pretty rad. That place is quite a beast, I learned. I went down 4 lines of beers on Sunday because I didn't order enough beer. Which fortunately no one was mad at me. They were like, it's okay. You'll be all right.
You're
it
learning.
Takes a minute. I grossly underestimated how much beer that place goes through on Sunday. Fortunately, the core brands were still there. So we're happy. We're happy about that. Three of them were weird mistakes that I guess are my fault, but were kind of weird timing stuff. One of them was totally my mistake. But I've been drinking a lot of our Oktoberfest, which I've been really digging. You know, if you listen to this podcast, that's one of my kind of favorite non-hoppy styles. But yeah, I'm still just chasing the fresh hop stuff. We had that Block 15 Fresh Pow series, Fresh Craze.
It was Fresh Flow.
Fresh Flow. Yeah.
Man, it was good.
And it was fresh hopped. That was really excellent. I keep drinking that Sun River fresh hop over and over because I keep finding it in cans, and I absolutely am loving that fresh hop. And I'll be at Freem this afternoon, so hey, we'll go see if they've got anything. I mean, I hear they make beer out there.
I'm going to assume they've got some fresh hops there.
I'm going to assume they've got one or two.
And what about you, Shane? What was your weekend
right now,
beer?
In fact, I'll start with those.
All right.
Let's see. Started at Freem, Fresh Hop Centennial, and then they've got a Hazy Amarillo, which was actually my favorite of the two. They've got a centrifuge, so it's not super, super hazy.
Yeah,
it's not like
I've noticed all their hazies are almost what we call on this podcast, like, or what I call in my life, Block 15 hazy.
Sure.
So it's not that true kind of Great Notion juice bomb.
It's not pulpy.
It's more
right?
that unfiltered.
Unfiltered.
Look.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Even though it is filtered, yeah, they get to play with these cool centrifuges and big beer toys where they can control the yeast load and all that stuff. So that was delicious. I did pick up a saison from them. It's a Jester King collaboration, which is not available through Point Blank at all yet. We'll see.
So you got your hands on that. That's good.
It's sitting, chilling. I was going to bring that, but
apparently we don't like saisons.
I don't love saisons either. So you're not alone.
I personally do. That's kind of my thing. But yeah, I brought a Pilsner. I've been drinking a ton of this beer. This is the Rothaus Pils from Germany. It is super expensive on draft, so if you find this anywhere on draft, it's probably like way more expensive than you're looking to spend, but it's like $3 at John's.
Really?
For a bottle, so yeah.
And you were saying this is kind of the crispy boy.
This
product
is
right
like
now.
The New York hipster Pilsner at the moment. I don't know why they chose this. It's delicious.
It's quite delicious.
It's delicious.
But there's something about, you know, trends just kind of blow us all away every once in a while.
Yeah, that's definitely something I want to get into later about those kind of trends and how you handle
right.
that stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
So that's your way. It's interesting that you love saisons so much. What about saisons speaks to you?
Part of it's because I grew up in like a farming community, and so a lot of those aromas and flavors are just super familiar to me. I don't know. I did a lot of homebrewing, and I made a lot of saisons, and made a lot of bad beer, and I made a lot of really good saisons.
I think that's what's interesting about that style is I've had some saisons in my day that I've really, really enjoyed, but I think I've just drank so many bad ones that it's kind of just like, I don't want to take a chance at that. But at the same time, I've drank more bad IPAs than any style on this planet, so, yet I still drink IPAs, so... Right. Maybe I should take another stab at it.
I think that's the case for a lot of beers for me. I mean, I tried, oh my God. What was the one that we had during our last tasting room? Was that a Saison?
What?
It was like salty. Or am I forgetting
salty.
The stuff?
Gozo?
Yeah,
it was a Gozo. Yeah. Yes. Excuse me. We tried that and I was terrified of it because I had
was
not
that
liked
the,
Gozos
the
before.
The limoncello one from Rubens?
Yes, that's what it was. And I did not like Gozos when I had had them in the past. And I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. Like I drank it and I was like, you know what? Maybe I can try this style again. And that could be the same for Saisons, I think, too.
Rubens is kind of known for their Gozo.
Yeah.
It's pretty solid Gozo.
Yeah, they've JBF'd a couple times. Yeah. Speaking of that, that's this week.
That's this week?
Today it starts day one on the floor.
What? That's why I get to be here during the middle of the day is because all these people are gone.
Yeah, everybody's gone.
Everybody's gone.
I know. I'm going out to Freem with some friends, and I reached out to our, you know, good friend of this podcast, Justin Walker, and I was like, hey, man, I'll be there on Thursday. You going to be there? He's like, nah, man, I'm going to GABF. I was like, all right, well, I'll bring you a case of beer. He goes, okay, I'll hook you up.
Oh, poor you. You have to go to GABF and drink a lot and have fun.
Our crew left the other day. Some of our guys judge. Be interesting this year. I heard this year they went back to, or I don't know if they've done it in the past, but last year they did it in alphabetical order, and I thought that was a nightmare when I was there just because it's like you know, brake side is on one side of the thing. And I just wanted to say hi to our Wayfinder friends, and they're on the complete opposite side. And I'm next to breweries I've never heard of, which is cool, but, you know, it's always nice to see familiar faces out there. This year it's by region. So I imagine the Northwest region is going to be a very busy spot, and B, a very inebriated spot amongst our colleagues, our peers.
When you say Northwest, I mean, man, that's going to be a ton of breweries there.
Yeah, I mean, is it just Oregon, or is it Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Northern California? Because if it's that big,
yeah, that's really going to be bad.
Yeah, I get a little tight in there, I would imagine. California's got a lot of breweries.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good luck to everyone out there. If anybody's listening to this out there, I had a blast last year. Have fun this year.
We have an episode from GABF way back in the last year yonder, so you can go listen to that.
So if you're out there, have a blast. You know, take pictures. Try to remember things. It's
a
marathon.
If you forget things, then that's great too.
It's a marathon, so just keep that in mind.
Yes, but you can still sprint every once in a while.
That is true.
Yes. All right, so I said this before the podcast, and I'll say it now just for the listeners out there. I know nothing about distribution. Like, this is a world that is so foreign to me. I'm learning a lot about beer doing this podcast, and I feel like I've kind of gotten to a new level of knowledge of a lot of things, but distribution is not something that we have tackled, and it's something that I really am excited to learn about, but I don't know a lot about. So I'm going to let Patrick lead the interview, and I'm going to jump in with questions here and there that I have. You know, they might be stupid questions. They might be maybe more layman's terms than you know, Patrick is asking, but that's just kind of, I'm just setting this up for you now. Just so if you don't hear me a lot in the beginning, it's because I'm trying to soak it in and think of interesting questions to ask. So there you go, Patrick. Well, take it away, friend.
Well, this is great. I'm glad that Shane, you were able to do this, because we met, what, five years ago? Back in the Lake Oswego days.
It's been a little while. Yeah, it's probably 6 years ago. Yeah.
6 years, something like that. I was a bartender at a new restaurant in Lake Oswego where the beer scene was absolutely nothing. I mean, it was kind of like if you walked into any of the restaurants around there and you weren't, you know, Western Bev or maybe Columbia, it was like, sorry, no one's here. We're busy. Get out. So it was kind of fun, because as I started, you know, kind of getting more into this place and becoming a little more influential in the beer buying, it was people like Point Blank. You were the rep at the time for our area, and General at the time before they were bought. And some of the independents were really excited because we wanted to bring your guys' beer in. So I was able to kind of start a relationship with you. And since then, you've worked your way up. Tell me what it is you do with Point Blank.
So I am the specialty beer guy for Point Blank, meaning I get to go to all the fun places like Belmont Station and John's Market, Apex, Beer Mongers, Cerveza, most of our favorite beer bars. Those are my accounts, and I get to take care of them. And I also get to do a lot more as far as like an actual route. So I've got the airport, I've got parts of Northeast Portland, I've got all sorts of other things. I'm spread out pretty far, but those are mainly what I do, along with a huge import portfolio. Point Blank has the best import portfolio in the city.
And it is your job. You are essentially the middleman to get the beer from the brewery to these shops.
Not from the brewery. So as a distributor, we are a customer of the brewery, is the best way to put it. Okay. So, and we try to be the best customer we can. You know, they work with us to put beers in the right places. So, for instance, Frame, let's start there. They're doing very well right now, obviously. Mm-hmm. So they make a ton of beer. They also don't make enough beer. Like, they are cranking. They've got cans. It's doing really, really well. You'll probably see a lot of those out of stock because it's really popular. So as far as we start as a customer of the brewery, and then we do our best to put the right beers in the right places.
So do you control then the amount that, I mean, you say like John's and Cerveza and all these bottle shops, you control how much they get, knowing the amount of beer that Freem has to give?
We try to give them as much as we can. Yeah, it's the goal to sell the beer, you know? A lot of times the brewery has the relationships with, say, like New Seasons, right? Which is something that Freem does, and they do often. They've even made beers for them. And so behind the scenes, that stuff goes on, and we just are literally a middleman when it comes to that. And that's okay. It's easy in and easy out. Yeah, those are things that sometimes are out of our hands, but yeah, it's our job to sell the beer to anybody.
Could it be said that you guys, in a sense, kind of control the market in a way that the consumer is really only going to A, potentially fall in love with, B, C, because you guys determine it's a good product to sell? Like, or how do you balance the pushing good beer with pushing beer that needs to be pushed, whether it's not as great as something like, you know, if someone's brewery A has IPA, which isn't as great as brewery B, Freem's IPA, do you dictate, do you want us to drink more Freem? How do you find that balance to get us to drink the other stuff? Because you guys have a pretty versatile portfolio.
Yeah, it's the market decides. We don't decide any of that. You know, Freem could be the nicest people in the world and make terrible beer, and the market's not going to buy it because it's not good beer. That's what it really comes down to, is the market decides how much beer gets sold, how much beer gets drank. It's all up to them. A lot of it, you know, you look in the grocery stores, post offs are a big deal. So it's just, you know, beer on post off, so it's cheaper. You go to QFC and there's like big stack outs of beer everywhere, and those beers tend to be cheaper. People are going to crank through those beers. Where, you know, you've got killer beers on the shelf that just kind of sit there at like $13 a six pack, where you see, you know, another beer in a stack out that's $7.99. You're buying that beer. Whereas someone like me or you, we look a little bit more crafty, or look for craftier beers. And so I'm looking at dates. I don't care if it's $13 for a six pack. If it's the beer I want, that's the beer I want.
Yeah.
And Portland is pretty unique in that way, where that's how people buy for at least the places that I frequent. But yeah, the grocery store culture is definitely, let's get it cheap and let's move some volume.
Shane from, God, I keep wanting to say Point Break. I'm so sorry. Shane from Point Blank Distribution here with us on Beers and Us. And so you said you work with a lot of the bottle shops. Mm-hmm. What is, you know, quickly or as detailed as you want, what is a day in the life for you going to these places and being the specialty beer guy? What are they asking of you? What are you asking of them? Kind of what is the routine that you have every day when you go to these places?
Well, the biggest part of what I do is being prepared. I start my morning and go through receiving reports. So we're pretty fortunate where we've got like a really cool system that when we get new beers in from, say, like Great Divide, and we've got all these cool new beers coming in from them, and I'm like waiting for those. So I'm waiting and making sure, you know, I can pitch this beer. If it's not coming in today, I know it'll be in next week. So I make sure I'm prepared. I write down everything I need for a sales pitch. Luckily I deal with like the nicest people in the world, so I don't have to deal with mean bar people
for the
most part.
Yeah. And I imagine you've built relationships with these guys at this point too.
Absolutely. Right? I've been doing this been with Point Blank for 7 years, drove for a year, which is a hard job, but it was like my favorite job ever. It was great.
You're driving trucks, dropping off,
slinging kegs around Hood River in the
unsung heroes of the beer game.
Exactly. Yeah.
It does seem kind of peaceful to do that.
They make the world go around for sure. Yeah. Having good drivers are hard to come by, and luckily we have some killer ones. So.
So when you meet with some of these people, let's take Belmont Station for example, probably you know the most desired craft beer bottle shop in Portland, or at least the longest tenured quote best bottle shop. What is the relationship like in the sense of the things they want that sometimes mix with the things you need to sell, and how they differ, how they stay the same, whether it's allocation for the stuff they want or stuff that, you know, basically how do you play ball with them and how do they play ball with you?
Play ball. That's a funny way to say. I mean, it really is relationship driven. Let's see. As far as allocations go, that is literally up to them as a customer. So they're driving sales, right? Mm-hmm. So for instance, you know, Fresh Hop Pallet Jack just went on and sold in less than 24 hours.
Yeah, I believe that.
They were the first people to ever get anything from Barley Browns. They were the first customer of Barley Browns, period. So normally in years past, Tyler Brown literally delivers that to them. I have no say in that whatsoever.
Wow.
And it's easily the most sought after beer I get asked for. But to answer your question, as far as like allocation stuff goes, it's loyalty for the most part. Like say I'm about to go to Apex and they've had 5 permanent handles of Boneyard, at least 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. So they're always going to get the good stuff from them. That's where that goes. It's all relationship driven.
And is that through you guys or Boneyard goes to them and says, oh, you guys have been loyal. Here's 5 to 6 good things.
It's them being a good customer of the brewery. It's you pat my back, I'll pat your back kind of a situation. And it's not, you know, a lot of times I'll get crap for saying, you know, like, hey, Apex has all this cool stuff on and how do you get that? And I'm like, well, it has nothing to do with me. People know where to go get that stuff. And so that's where they go. Yeah, it's just my job to get it there. Well, it's cold and delicious.
Is there, and if you can't talk about this, that's fine, but has there been like the easiest and the hardest sales pitch you've had to make for a certain beer? And if you can't talk about it, I understand, but.
Easiest and the hardest sales pitch. Oh man. You know, now that I've been doing it for so long, it comes a lot more easy, but it's really hard to put yourself out to a brand new bar owner or like, for instance, when I go to Belmont Station, it can be somewhat daunting. And I've told them this before, so this isn't any randomness. You walk into a back room and they're just kind of back there in this like, the back part of Belmont Station used mm-hmm. to be like this little apartment. So there's like, you walk through a kitchen, there's a bathroom, and then you walk in and it's just computers and people kind of sitting at a desk. And it can be somewhat daunting for say like a new sales rep that I bring in that's like training or something like that. That stuff can be really daunting, but now that I've been used to it for a long time, it's not. They're just people, man. They're really the nicest people around. I am fortunate where I get to deal with a lot of cool people. Bar owners are just, you know, average Joes like you and I.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. And at the end of the day, we all love beer. And we're all trying to.
It's the common language.
You got to make money, and you got to push stuff. It's interesting. You mentioned this earlier. As a consumer, you know, you're a date code kind of guy. Mm-hmm. How difficult is it for you guys to keep fresh on the shelves for at least some of your, at least you personally, your main accounts or some of the smaller accounts that are, you know, in other people's territories and stuff like that. How challenging is it to keep things fresh on the market?
Because just to add to that, we did the episode a month ago now, where we experimented with the Widmer box.
Sure.
And we found out that the beer in there was, the one we were drinking, it was 4 months old already. And we had, I mean, it was Albertsons. We got it at Albertsons.
Right.
But, I mean, we were shocked that it was that old
in this
city.
Town. Yeah.
Right. On the grocery level, it's tough. And for someone who, like me, I have like 2 grocery stores. So I'm in there checking codes all the time and I'm really against selling old beer as it is. And then with that being said, there's a lot of styles and a lot of like say this import beer, right? This beer has a year life
expectancy.
Exactly. It's likely pasteurized and it's delicious. But if you had that after a year, it would taste like
cardboard
hair.
Yeah.
Cardboard, sure.
Ew.
body of Christ. Like that's always what I tell people. It's either cardboard or like remember the little wafers you got in church?
Oh yeah.
That's what I tell people oxidation tastes like.
I don't know that, but that's okay.
Oh yeah. Sorry, he's a Jew.
Jewish, right? Yeah. Well, if you ever had an old stale
cracker
body of Christ that's oxidation right there. I feel like a lot of people pick up oxidation in different ways, and like it's probably just old beer.
Mm-hmm.
But to get back to your question, as far as like pulling beers, you just pull it off the shelf and credit people, and it's pretty simple. It's not simple on the grocery level because there's so much there. Luckily, our brands do really well in grocery stores, and I don't have to worry about that.
Speaking of that, name off, rattle off some of the brands you like.
Oh, man.
Or not you like, but some of the brands you carry, I should say.
Stuff we've got.
Yeah, there you go. That way we're not playing
favorites. Some of the bigger stuff. We've got Barley Browns, Boneyard, Double Mountain, Von Ebert's one of the newer fun ones. Everybody in the Gorge is
you guys.
Is with us. So we've got Freem, Double Mountain, Everybody's. Boneyard, Good Life. Good Life just came out with some killer new stuff. They've got a killer Bavarian lager. And then I know you guys don't like hazies, but Hazy Pale in cans is really good.
I remember when I first met you and was going through Point Blank. For me, it was like Point Blank is the hop king. This is the place, especially 6 years ago. Yeah. You know, it was like, I got to have that Double Mountain, got to have that Boneyard, got to have that Barley Browns. I don't know about this Brewery Freem. Everyone says it's good. I think it's trash. but Point Blank is where I got to go. How have you guys seen yourself grow in the last, say, 5 years to where, you know, whether it's versatiling the portfolio, whether it's enhanced imports in terms of competition with the other guys, the Melitas, the Columbias, the Western Bevs of the world. Where have you guys seen yourself grow?
As far as growth goes, you know, this business is adapt or die. I mean, you have to bring in new breweries, new blood.
Yeah.
It has to be done. We're pretty lucky that we have killer brand recognition and we don't have to worry about people really wanting to leave, because this is the kind of business where people are mobile, and it's all relationship based. So as far as us growing, you know, we've in the past few years we've gotten some really killer breweries. Like, we picked up Melvin from the whole general thing. Our import portfolio just keeps getting bigger and better, and luckily, people are starting to finally figure out that all these delicious pilsners that people are drinking locally all came from over there.
Yeah,
we're starting to sell a lot more of those, and I see that as being a little bit more of the future, hopefully. But IPA's king, and we have a lot of those for sure. Those are my favorites.
When you talk about the import portfolio, is it very different dealing with the breweries in Europe or wherever else that you're getting them from versus dealing with the breweries here? Is there more pressure with it? Are they, I mean, is it just beer and they're nice and they understand kind of how the game works, or what's challenging about that?
The challenge is a lot of it's price, a lot of it's recognition. You know, like, for instance, Weinsteffen, oldest brewery in the world. We sell a ton of their beer. It's killer beer.
I know what they look like.
People
I've had their
know.
Beer.
Yeah.
We had it on the podcast, right? Mm-hmm.
The hardest part about selling import beer, especially on the draft side, is all their couplers are different. They don't use American Sankeys. We only have one, Bavik. If you ever see Bavik, which is a delicious Belgian Pilsner, they have American Sankeys, and it's delicious.
And the Sankey is the connector
to
the keg that pours it through the draft system. So it's like the American Sankey is basically it's like a lock turn. Drop it in, turn it, and pull the handle out and drop it. Like you'd see it like at a kegger.
Yeah.
You know, that's the American Sankey, to where the European is like this flat top that kind of slides over this other flat top.
There's a lot of different ones, man.
Yeah, slides over. Yeah, they're all over the place, and it's like a pressure thing. I mean, the concept is all basically the same. They're just, it's like plugins. Like, it's plugins exactly in England.
You go to a different country, you gotta
plugins
get the adapter,
in England. Yeah. It does the same thing, but the plugin is different than it is in
business
America.
Business idea. Make a Sankey adapter if that doesn't exist.
it's just easy to just take it off and put a new one on.
That's the thing, though, is like, for me, I know it's like changing a light bulb. It's really easy.
Yeah.
But selling that to a bar manager is really difficult, because then, you know, 90% of bartenders at night are usually female. And for them to sling kegs around and change that thing out is just, their bosses and the owners are not going to ask them to do that. It's just unfair. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
You know, whereas you guys probably serving off like a massive serving tank, you're not going to run out of Pilsner.
Yes, this is true.
Right.
He is correct. We have massive serving tanks.
Right. I didn't need to order that this past weekend. Don't worry, bosses. We were fine.
There's still 8 barrels in that tank.
But yeah, so, and you're the middleman, right? That's kind of your role in general. You're not,
I'm the face of the distribution company itself. So, yes, okay. I am the middleman. As far as, like, the tiers go, so you got brewery, and then if you want to go, like, European, let's start there, there's an importer. So importers sell beer to us, to distributors, and so we're the customer of the importer.
Okay.
And then it trickles down from distributor to bar owners, or, say, customers. Like, customers can come to the the distributor and buy beer.
Is there a massive difference between you guys and like a Columbia or a Miletus, who I at least
massive.
Okay, I was going to say on the surface, they drive all the 18-wheeler trucks and they're all over the place. What is different between you and what you do and what they do? Is it just the scale, or is it actually a difference in model?
Definitely a difference in model, for sure. The Columbias of the world they're very corporate. I don't have to deal with a corporate boss, which is great. I don't have to wear a collared shirt. I can look like me, which I have to say does get us a lot of not more business, but different business, right?
Yeah.
Because you're a human being.
I'm versus, a human being as opposed
being
to being
a corporate person. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I really don't know how much a lot of those dudes know about beer. Like, they might be a great salesman, but they might not know what the heck they're talking about when they go into a bar. And I get to see that firsthand. And
it's something, you know, everyone struggles with in the beer biz. You know, I'm not calling out any of like our employees, but it's, you can tell when you walk into a brewery if the bartender, when you ask, you know, tell me about this Pilsner, and the bartender just regurgitates stuff they were told, or if they actually know the beer. And that goes a long way with the customer. I was at Grixen Brewing the other day. I can't believe I forgot to say this. And this woman was helping me, and I asked her.
Is that the new one over by?
It's like right by Apex on 11th and 11th and Division.
Okay.
Little brewery, cool little space.
Right, right behind Beer Mongers.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Near Beer Mongers and Pine State over there.
Really,
right?
Really cool spot. And this woman was, you know, I saw her kind of helping people and talking with people about some beers. And I was like, I think she knows what she's talking about. I'm going to ask her a weird question because I want to know. It said they had a fresh hop IPA on. And I said, excuse me, this is going to be a weird question, but do you know where these fresh hops were added in the brew process? And she goes, oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure they're on the back end. And I was like, really? And she goes, yeah. That way it's like cleaner, less vegetal. And I was like, either someone told you that and you're regurgitating it, but you sold it to me, I'll have one. I got excited about it. And I was really, you know, you're really pumped because you kind of know, hey, this person knows their beer as opposed to, just being regurgitated. So I can imagine, anytime I see a point blank person rolling around, they look like us.
Right. It's not to say that, you know, every Columbia rep is that way, because that's just not true. But you definitely see some people out there, and it could be Columbia, it could be Miletus, it could be, I've even run into this with people that are like full on reps for breweries, and they're just like, they have no idea. There's an etiquette to doing what I do. So for instance, I could go into like a liquor store and I'm waiting in line to make my pitch behind another rep, right? And some dude from a brewery comes in and just like jumps in between, and you got to say something.
Yeah.
Hopefully the beer buyer says something, so I don't have to be the jerk, but it happens, you know, and more often than not, those people don't stick around. it's just part of the industry, you know? I mean, if you're not.
I mean, there is a competition aspect to it in that sense, I imagine.
Super competitive, so. Yeah. Especially out here, man, it's cutthroat.
Yeah, what is the easiest way to keep yourself up with competitions or with the competition? Is it just keeping good brands on your book, keeping those relationships maintained? I mean, I don't mean to answer it for you, but is that kind of the way that, you know, somebody with a larger portfolio, maybe a larger distribution footprint like a Columbia or a Miletus, is it just because you've got great stuff like Boneyard, and which Boneyard RPM is in, you know, 70% of bars in this town when it comes to an IPA.
Only 70. It's like 100 in there, right?
You got to show up.
Yeah.
Period. If you don't, you know, if you don't show up to your accounts, you're not going to stay on draft. Usually, that's usually how that works out. And it's not always easy, you know, juggling time, like time management. I was actually just having this conversation with my boss. Time management is super tough. Like, I'm spread out from the airport all the way to Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me to manage my time properly and get in front of the right people that I need to get in front of is not easy. I'm constantly in traffic. I'm constantly driving. I have a facial recognition camera in my car. Like, I mean, we're on the on the road all the time. So yeah, it's not just about what you have. It's about if you show up and if you're nice to people.
One question then, this is something that I've kind of alluded to in a couple of podcasts before. So I live out in Beaverton, And I feel like the beer game out where I'm from, although getting better, is obviously nowhere near as close as it is to in the city. I know that's not necessarily where you go, where your accounts are, but do you see the suburban, it doesn't have to be Beaverton specifically, but the suburban areas getting more intelligent, knowledgeable, bringing in more of the specialty beers, all of that stuff, than you have in the last couple of years? Or is it still a long ways away from where Portland is right now?
I want to say they're probably a little bit farther away than you might want them to be.
Yes.
You know, I don't spend a lot of time out there either. It's definitely an RPM world out there at the moment from what I hear. But it's getting better. You know, like there's ABV out there and some of those bottle shops do really, really well. I wish I knew how to answer that a little bit better because I really don't spend any time out there.
Well, I mean, you kind of answered it in saying they're much further behind than I want them to be, which means that exactly. They're not, they may be growing, but it's not exactly, not exactly where it could be. I mean, there's near my house, there's been an open restaurant for 2 years, empty restaurant that's been up for lease for forever. And I've heard rumors of multiple breweries potentially going in there and they don't. And part of me is like, just do it and introduce beer to where I live, because the closest brewery to me is probably, well, the new Ex Novo opened up, and then there's Ancestry in Tualatin. They kind of are equidistant to where I live.
Stay tuned. You're getting a great notion.
Am I?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. But that's fine. It's another, I just bring more out there. I think if you expose more people to it, then I think it naturally helps, because anybody who lives in the burbs and doesn't want to come to Portland that often, or, you know, that's where they work and they want to stay close to home, they're not getting the same experience naturally, right? So you go to a restaurant and you might have RPM and Apocalypse IPA and just other stuff that's been there forever, and you're never getting a chance to spread your wings.
I think, you know, there's another side to that too, though, where breweries are seeing the ceiling and opening up another brewery costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of money. So you're really putting your neck out there. I mean, Beaverton seems like an obvious choice, right? But if it fails, then you're out of a lot of money.
In trouble.
It's getting to the point where people are seeing the ceiling, and it doesn't matter if it looks like there's room there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's going to be another brewery in Southwest within the next year. And I know he's a good brewer. It's going to be a killer brewery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I hope the best for him, man. I mean, it's like I said before, it's an evolve or die industry. Mm-hmm. If you don't keep evolving and just making good beer, then you're done.
And that's something that Mike and I have discussed many times on this podcast. I mean, we've seen a little bit of it in 2019, but I think in 2020 we're about to see a serious fall in some breweries. I think we're going to see a lot of people close down. I mean, I can think of two off the top of my head that are laying people off, that are destined for it. And I'm not even talking about Widmer, you know? So it's like, how do you guys, as distributors with some of those accounts, is it your job to try to help them? Not in the sense of like lie about the quality of their beer or anything like that, you know, but does it kind of land on you guys to give them a bone, to help them out a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I mean, like I said, we are a customer of that brewery, but they help us out a lot. Like they have brewery reps that we work directly with. And
do you find them to be stubborn about it? Or are they open to
can
what
be
you're
it's
saying?
Their livelihood, you know? When you open a brewery and you go, you know, say like you worked for a big brewery and when you go to brewing school or you start, you know, washing kegs, the one thing you want to do is open your own brewery. Like that's mm-hmm. the goal, right?
All bartenders want to own their own bar.
Exactly. You stick your neck out there big time to start a brewery, and if people aren't behind you in the way that you want them to be, they take it personally, and you can't help but take it personally, right? And it's not personal. It's just, you know, what the customer wants, and you can put this beer in front of them. You can sell it to them as well as you can, as you like. And ultimately, it's their choice to buy it or not. That's, I hate to make it so simple, but it really is that simple. I mean, I put my neck out there for them, and then they choose to buy or not.
And as far as like, and as far as like trends go, you know, 2019 were the year of the lager, the year of the strata hop. How much do you guys play into that? Is it something that you can kind of see before the brewery in terms of what's selling and say, hey, Good Life, you know, Helles lagers are really popular? Or is Good Life saying, hey, we want to jump on this lager train, you know, what do we need to do? Or, you know, how can you help us spread that love?
See, I would say that the year of the lager was like 2 years ago. we finally saw local breweries like Upright and Freem start making lagers locally, as opposed to looking at Europe for the super clean, ultra minerally badass beers. And now we can get them over here. So now that we've got like two ex-Chuckanut brewers in the city or in, you know, around here, it's we're spoiled for sure. We just started working with another company that is sort of like an importer. What they do is they go to a brewery, say for instance like Surly or something like that, and they'll go
Surly's through Minnesota, us. Right?
They're in Indiana.
They're Midwest.
I'm thinking Three Floyds. Either way, okay. They're in the Midwest. I should know this. I just did all this research on this. I lost my train of thought.
It's a new importer, and they're sort of an importer.
Okay, so what they're doing is they're coming to any city, say like Seattle, Portland, LA, wherever, and they go to this brewery and they say, "Will you brew a batch of beer specifically for this city, just because it's not available at the moment through any distributor?" So that's like his business, and it's just kind of weird trying to figure out and gauge whether or not the market's going to want that, because we as a city, we're like the litmus test for a lot of breweries. Like everybody wants to be out here. That's why you're seeing like the day one distributions where they're signing all these 30-day contracts.
And picks up all these California guys. Right. That's why we get Beechwood and things like that.
We are the litmus test as far as whether or not your brewery could succeed in a city outside of where you're currently at. And a lot of times they fail, you know, or don't do as well as they'd like. They get pissed.
Yeah, we've seen ebbs and flows. I mean, I've seen Melvin go up and down, be really popular in this city and then kind of disappear, but then make a little bit of a comeback. I've seen the same thing with Great Divide. They show up, it's like, yeah, we're down, and then all of a sudden disappear, but then come back. So I can't imagine the rodeo you have to play with that in terms of just keeping your ears to the streets and trying to make sure you know what's moving.
Right, and that goes back to the evolve or die thing. Like Melvin said they would never make any hazies or anything like that, and now they've got two, and they're freaking delicious.
Yeah. Where I guess we can finish up with this and kind of like a fun note. Where do you see what's next? What's 2020 like? What are we going to see in 2020?
Well, if lagers for you is 3 years ago, then I think you're going to blow our minds probably.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you said IPA is king. You know, I think we're starting to see, you know, with the hazy starting to kind of settle out a little bit, I think we're going to see some more West Coast IPAs.
That was our best guess a couple episodes ago. West Coast IPAs next year again.
I expect lagers to continue on this stuff.
Lagers will continue. I see a little bit of an evolution of both of those. So we're definitely going to see, like, the evolution of the lagers. Like, hopefully we get some slow pour pilsner coming somewhere that's not Prost or Stammtisch. I would love to see something evolve like that, because that's,
I saw an article that the new trend in America is foam, and I was like, oh really?
So pouring beer properly is all of a sudden gonna be cool.
Yeah. Which is crazy. I mean, like, you know, to use GABF as an example, I was out there last year and they've got, I can't remember the place off the top of my head, the 5-minute pills.
Bierstadt.
Bierstadt, thank you.
That's the spot.
And you know, they've got three beers on draft. And they give you a little cutout piece of paper, and they're like, we've got three beers. And it was the famous 5-minute pils. I think they had a Fest beer, and I think they had a Helles. And that was like, those are our three beers right now. And it's called the 5-minute pils, and it works because it's the brand. But if I walk in to a beer bar in town, I don't want to wait 5 minutes. I think it's that American side of us. It's like, I want that beer now. Like, why do I got to wait 5 minutes?
Because so it'll be worth it when you wait 5 minutes.
Well, I agree. I'm not saying me personally. I just,
you know,
wonder,
you really don't. That's the thing, though.
Can the public change
it,
to that?
They call it the 5-minute pils, but when you walk in there, I haven't been to Bierstadt, but I've been to breweries and beer bars that do this. Mm-hmm. They make two or three beers, and they've got 30 different beers going at the same time.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. But it's still that proper pour. I don't know if we have a place like that in this town that is busy enough to be able to do that.
Right. Preston and Stomptish do a really good job at that. You know, they pour beer properly. But I would like to see a little bit more of an evolution, like a beer bar doing something like that would be great. I can tell you something that's going to come into the market that you're not going to like. Hmm. We're going to start seeing a lot more, they call them RTDs, they're ready to drink cocktails and things like that.
Yeah,
that's already started to come
into
the fold.
Like the hard seltzer train evolved.
Seltzer's not going away either.
Well,
man.
No, but I mean, like, hard seltzer's been so popular that you're going to start seeing mixed cocktails.
You're going to start seeing hard coffees, like the Pabst one's about to launch. And I hate to say it, but it's really good.
Yeah. Well, I mean like,
that sounds good.
You're going to start seeing a lot
I like
of that
Irish
stuff.
Coffee.
Yeah. That's probably where, I mean, we'll evolve in that. You're also seeing a lot of the CBD stuff and non-alcoholic sector is doing really well. The government may or may not let us keep doing that, but we're trying.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that stuff on the market and some of it's really good.
Well, what brewery for you right now is killing it?
Pick one.
I spend a lot of time at Von Ebert.
Nice.
I spend a lot of time out there. Sean is killing it at the East Side location and the wings, man.
Wings. Keep coming for the wings. Yeah, and Sam's a good friend of mine at the Pearl Spot.
I still haven't met Sam because I don't go downtown anymore.
Amazing person. Amazing guy.
I've heard nothing but good things.
I had a pimento cheeseburger there when I was last there.
Yeah, so I'm a little biased. Sam did a little stage with us at Breakside, and so that's where I got to know him. And you know, I finally went out to Glendevere and had a bunch of Sean's beer out there, and I was not blown away because I've had his beers in the past, and I've always known he's been a talented brewer. But they've got two spots that are making different beers, yet it's all Von Ebert beer. And I'm glad you mentioned that because Mike and I are big fans of them.
Yes.
We think they make great beer.
He's doing a great job. It's not to say that there's not a ton of other breweries out there.
We did say pick one. So
but
there it
that
is.
Is where I spend most of my time these days.
That's great. Yeah. When you just need a spot to like get some work done, you just...
I just know it's good and wings. I like Tom a lot, and then you know when Mike was brewing at Fatheads when it was Fatheads, I was down there a lot. So yeah.
All
right, Shane, you got a beer of the week for us too, huh?
I do.
All right, let's do that next. Shane from Point Blank with us throughout the entire podcast. Part one of our distribution series continues with beer of the week next here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris and Shane. Beer of the Week time here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris and Shane, who has brought us a Beer of the Week. And you could pop that on the mic if you'd like. Don't need to hide it. There you go. He's brought us a beer from a brewery that we have yet to talk about on the podcast, but one that the two of us, Patrick and I, when we did a day of multiple breweries before recording a podcast.
I can already tell.
We have a trapdoor beer in front of us, and you know what that means. It's a hazy.
She's a hazy one.
Now, like we've talked about, all your listeners know, and Shane is a listener of the podcast, and he knows.
Oh, not bad.
He knows we don't love hazies. However, we have also found a couple of hazies that we have had that we have enjoyed.
Remember that Lewitt hazy?
Yes.
I still think about that hazy.
Yeah, that was a good one, and they were very proud of that, and they were selling it in cans and promoting it, so that was a good one.
I like those guys at Lewitt. It's like my old days.
And there was another one that we did as well that I think we actually enjoyed. I'm not going to remember it, but I remember doing it on the podcast.
I think it was that Matchless Fresh Hop Pale last week.
Well, that was yours. I did not love that one.
Oh, I did kind of like that one.
There was one that we did. I think this was like 20 episodes ago. So, what, 5 months at this point? There was one that we had. And I was like, man, that was a good hazy. I don't remember what it was, though. So
I just want hops and bitterness.
Well, maybe we'll get a little bit of both in here, huh?
You can get hops and bitterness in this. It's just ugly.
Mike Trout's no Mickey Mantle.
What? What beer is this, Shane? You got it in front of you.
This is the Trapdoor Co-Hop Fresh Hop IPA. So these guys, I'll just read the back here. Our fourth annual neighborhood collaboration is back. This year's batch was hopped with over 400 pounds of fresh hops from our local co-hop growers and nearby Crosby Hope Farms. Teamwork makes the dream work. This is all Centennial and Amarillo.
Does that really say Crosby Hope Farms?
It does.
H-O-P-E? Mm-hmm. That's not how you spell Crosby Hop Farms.
No.
Nice.
Did you notice how I snuck that
nice.
In?
Nice. Uh-oh.
Whoopsie doopsies.
One thing that's really cool before we get into talking about this is that they've done, I've seen this with some other breweries before, but basically they're letting, my mom and her husband live two blocks from Trapdoor in the house I grew up in. So I'm downtown Vancouver semi-frequently saying hey to them, and it's the closest brewery. It's across the street from the pot shop. And, they did it last year and the year before, I think, but they couldn't get, theirs weren't ready in time this year. But it's a really cool thing. People in the neighborhood literally harvest their hops and take them to the brewery, and they're making a beer off the neighborhood's hops.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Good Life does something similar.
Yeah.
1,000 Hippies. 10,000 Hippies is what they call it.
Great. Awesome name.
Killer beer. That's a great name. All right. Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, I took my first sip, and I'm not going to lie. I don't feel like I hate this like a normal hazy. I'm actually enjoying it. I get a lot of the fresh hop kind of right off the nose. It smells good to me. It does not smell like a hazy beer. There is a little bit of bitterness missing because of the haze, and that's fine because that's the style. But I'm getting a lot of that hop flavor. It's not being muddled too much by juicy pulpiness to me. I'm actually enjoying it.
It looks like all the hops that they were brought in from the neighborhood are Centennial, and then they got Amarillos from Crosby. We got Amarillos from Crosby this year, and they were phenomenal. I think the hop character in this beer is pretty nice.
For hazy, especially.
Yeah, I want bitterness, but for the style, obviously, it's not going to be there. But I really enjoy the hop character on this beer. I think the nose is really fresh.
That's where I get a lot of the fresh hops in there.
Yeah, we're not getting it's not overly vegetal,
nope.
Which is nice, but I think that'd be kind of hard to do in a hazy just because of we were kind of talking a little off air, or was it on air? I don't remember, but about yeast strains and stuff, and kind of makes hazies a little tricky sometimes. But this has nice hop character.
It's snappier than most hazy beers.
I think that's kind of, usually at least when I have a hazy at the end, it kind of, the back end to me it's lacking for me, right? It's just kind of there, and you're like, well, okay, it's a sip of beer. This one is like, it gives me that snappy is a great word. Right. The beer flavor that I want in the back end of my palate.
A lot of hazies, you know, you're getting like, so this has Pilsner, Two Row, flaked wheat, and rolled oats. The flaked wheat and the rolled oats are both unmalted wheats, and that's where the haze comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the original hazies, the heady toppers of the world and stuff like that. A lot of that is just full on plant matter. a lot of the original Great Notion stuff, like full on, like you would get pollen looking material on the top of your beer and it smelled amazing. I actually haven't drank those beers in quite a while. I just can't park anywhere near there.
I work next to one of them and I never go in there.
I don't even, so the thing about a lot of these is, so the original yeast strain that like hazy beers came from, like Heady Topper, the yeast strain is called Conan, and everybody has a different name for it. And I don't know if everybody's using the same thing. I feel like most everybody is using London Ale 3, which is like the old school Boddington's yeast.
London 3, I know for us, we've used a lot of London 3, but there's some other ones floating around. There's Juice is a new yeast strain.
That's coming from Imperial. So
yeah, and there's one that's like, it's like Olympias, something along those lines. I can't remember. Olympus, Olympion. I can't remember. Something like that that's been floating around lately too. But yeah, I mostly see London 3.
Right. And that's, I mean, a lot of people in Portland just in general are using that yeast strain, like Laurelwood, Hopworks. Those are their house yeast strains.
Yeah.
And they're
really? Their house yeast strain.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was going to say, I went to Hopworks a couple of weeks ago. They're going like all hazy. Their IPA line was 9 out of 10 were hazies, and I was like, oh, this was not the case when I was last year.
Migration's doing the same thing. I went to Migration on Friday with some friends.
No, Straight Out of Portland's great.
Straight Out of Portland is great.
Don't mess with that beer. I love that beer.
But they had like 9 hazy beers on.
Wow. Is this out east?
Yeah.
I haven't been to the out east one yet.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, all right.
So
I've been digging their pilsner.
As a hazy guy.
If you like pizza.
Yeah.
I do like pizza. Yeah, although Mike, I'll judge pizza.
Mike thinks this.
You
Mike,
go right ahead.
Mike thinks this town sucks at pizza.
It might. I've never been to New York.
Have you been to Greasy Corner Pizza, I'll tell you
Have you
that.
Been to Pizza Jerk?
Not yet. No, I've heard it's good though.
That's the only one that people tell me is like straight up New York, and I've never been to New York, and to be honest with you, I don't like the little pepperoni cups. It makes me, because I get that shit in my beard.
And they pull That's up with gross. Grease.
Sorry.
It's fine. I'll bleep it out for you. Don't worry.
I'm all about that.
I have a potty mouth.
So do both of us.
Yeah. I'm all about. Yeah, we just happen to work in radio too. So like we get, when a microphone comes in front of us, we get filter on.
Well, me, especially you.
I had a dream last night had to hit that we had to hit the dumb button 3 times in a row because of you.
Because of me?
Yeah.
That was a dream, though.
Yeah, I know.
We've had to hit the dump button twice in a row because of you.
That is true. Yes, that is true.
But as a guy who likes hazies, and you're talking about kind of the old school hazy that had more of the polleny stuff at the top, do you like, dislike, care the direction that hazies are going? Do you feel like there was kind of the craze got so big that maybe there was a bit of kind of a mediocre hazy just being thrown out there to be thrown out there, and now it's coming back to being better? How do you view the change in that market as a guy who likes hazies?
I don't know if I like them. I definitely drink them because a lot of my favorite breweries are making them.
Truth.
So I got to try it. You know, it's one of those things where you're good breweries are putting them out there, and it's my job to know whether or not they're terrible.
I love West Coast IPAs.
It's a great way to put it.
I love West Coast IPAs, but I love Von Ebert, so I did not think twice when I ordered Sector 7 at the last Timbers game I was at. I was like, I know this beer is hazy, but I looked at the list, and I was like, nothing else is really talking to me. If I'm going to drink a hazy, it might as well be from a boys at Von Ebert, you know?
You know, it really goes back to that evolve or die thing. Like, you got to... Barley Browns, I talked to Tyler... And he was like, I'm not doing it. I'm not making one. And then like 2 weeks later, they had one.
I believe there was chatter around our brewery about not making them.
Right.
And now we package some.
Boneyard will not make one because their beers are unfiltered. And they're, you know, Tony was just like, I'm good. Our beer's really good. So I'm cool.
They also have a brand that's big enough they can kind of withstand not making that hazy.
And, you know, there's that. And like, you know, we've seen it. To an extent in some other things, whether it's like Block 15 or Double Mountain, that, you know, that ownership and head brewmasters can sometimes just be like, you know what? I don't want to because I don't have to. And I'm not going to. And you can't make me.
Pretty much.
And you're like, oh, okay.
That's exactly where Tony's
Block 15,
at,
yeah. You're one of my favorite breweries in the world. Why don't you submit to Oregon Beer Awards? Because we don't care. What? Yeah, we don't care.
They don't care.
Okay.
All right.
And I mean, that's that kind of fun cavalier mentality that when you're a name like Boneyard, and I'm not lying, that RPM is probably in 70% of dive bars in Portland, you can do whatever you want.
You're killing it.
You know, some I would like RPM to be more consistent, but that's just me as a beer snob. The general public doesn't care. They keep drinking it. They love it.
They might not even notice the difference
either. It's good beer. For the record, it's a good beer. But yeah, sometimes when you're just kind of on that level, you can kind of say, hey, we do what we want. We don't have to do anything else.
That's exactly where they're coming from. Yeah, they just do things on their own accord. And
I mean, I respect
more power
it.
To them.
As somebody that loves to just stick it to the man, like I'm totally in.
Yeah. Pay cash for their stuff and they don't have to worry about banks or anything.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
Sounds like a weed shop.
All right, Shane. Point Blank Distribution. Thank you so much for coming in. Thank you
for
the beer
me.
And the beer of the week. Very interesting stuff. And I learned a lot. So thank you. Next week, do we know where we're going next week for our distribution series?
Hopefully I've got a supply chain manager from a large brewery in town, someone who works on basically the person selling beer to Shane.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll get that angle.
Hopefully we get
it.
That angle. And then I'm trying to find another angle of a self-distribution just to kind of see what that's like. We talked a little bit about that with Eldon when we did the Barrelick kind of podcast, but I'd really like to dive into a little bit more of the struggles, the advantages, how they see, you know, the enemy, like Point Blank. Not that you're the enemy, but you know, I'm just trying to, hey, I got to stir it up. I need clicks. I need clicks here, all right?
But yeah, so that'll be coming up the next 3 weeks or next 2 weeks. We'll have a little three-part series on this. Should be very, very interesting for all of you out there to learn about distribution, because I think most beer drinkers have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. They're like, oh, my beer's here. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and just to wrap things up, and you know, I'll let you finish on this. It to a general consumer, especially the grocery shopper, it kind of dictates your life and you don't know it. You know, exactly. That is when you go to the store and you pick up a $10 six pack, you know, that distributor is going to kind of have a lot to say in what's there for you.
With those bigger guys, yeah, like Columbia and Miletus, they create sets at grocery stores and it's up to them. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's why the AB supply chain is so coveted, you know, like Alesong just signed on for that.
Mm, yeah.
And that's what it's for. You know, they don't want to go out there and sell beer. They want somebody else to do it for them.
Right.
Find us on Instagram, instagram.com/beersonus. Find Shane at Keg Wrangler. I remembered it.
Attaboy.
Patrick's at PDD085. And then you can find me on Twitter. I don't have a personal Instagram. At MikeLynch27 on Twitter. Thank you, Shane. We will be back next week with another distribution episode for you. And we'll see you then.
Traces.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.